Welcome to the Green with Envy podcast. I am your host, Lerato Moja. You know that saying, you can't fill from an empty cup? Well, at the rate we are consuming our natural resources, Mother Nature's cup is on her last drops. This podcast aims to remind us of the simple things we can do to get her back on her feet. Join me as I chat to my friends, old and new, on the simple things we can do to protect and preserve our environment. Hi, Maya and Mawande.
Hi, Lerato.
Yeah, thank you for being part of this journey that I'm starting to take. You're my first guests on the Green with Environment podcast, and I'm so grateful to you guys for making the time and, you know, having this conversation with me. Today, you're my guest because the other day I came to your house and I've seen that you've converted your garden into like a food production machine. So I just wanted us to talk about that and talk about, you know, how to start your own food garden, what goes behind that, and, you know, just take people through what they need to do. So, you know, I've got questions that I'm going to ask you guys, and yeah, just keep it simple. The whole aim of this podcast is to take away the science from, you know, living consciously and being green. So the more we keep it as easy, you know, the language easy as possible, the better.
Well, I'm Mawande, married to Mayenzeke, and we stay in the East Rand, Joburg. I'm an advocate by profession, but on my spare time, I try to garden a bit. I have to admit, it's my husband's passion. But you know, when you're married, people sort of take you along their own journeys, you know, and the passions between the two of us, they sort of, you know, interchange. So he then introduced me to gardening, funny enough, because I've never been into that. Because I mean, I've been in boarding school since I was 8 or 9. So I was never really at home. So I've never had an opportunity to grow anything.
Yeah.
So he then, so my husband then suggested that we should start gardening, and that's how I got into it. But I have to admit, the gardening side of things is his thing. I'm more on the table side of things. So I get to cook what we grow at home. But I mean, of course, the love and the passion is also there for me.
And my I only see her when we harvest. Never seen her in the garden. Be honest.
But, that's a lie.
So my name is Mayenzeke Baza, and I'm the husband, as she mentioned. So I'm an entrepreneur. So that's basically what I do. I'm a stay-home dad. I take the kids to school, I pick them up when she's busy. But then when I get a bit of spare time, I go to the garden. I grew up in the rural areas. So gardening was not necessarily something you could run away from, because it was part of food security, right? Yeah. So it's far to go to the city or to the town to get food. But we grew up that, you know, plowing, you know, and planting or looking after cattle or sheep was normality. It was normal. So if you didn't go to, after school, you had to go the sheep, you know, bring them back, or not, you have to go just, you know, cultivate the weed, you know, from the crops. So that's how I grew up. Yeah. So when we initially, we bought a house with a bigger space, you know, which is what Steam has learned. So I said to wife, maybe it's important that, you know, we start planting our own vegetables. Also, you know, the issue is the shop sells you organic, which is not necessarily organic. Okay. And organic is not easy. It's difficult. So yeah, that's basically one of the things, the reason I actually was passionate, because I just wanted to grow my own vegetables, where I control the pesticides, where I control, you know, how, what we put in the soil. That's the love. I mean, I'm sure you've been here. Almost every space that we find,
you find some
veggies, and it's always war, right? Yeah. But when it's harvesting, everyone is excited. Like when we have to say, take out this part, you know, it's...
You know, Lerato, we have to create space for the kids as well. Yeah. So we can't just plant everyone anyway. So we have to find like space for the kids to play.
Yeah.
So, thanks for that. And also, I like what you said about, you know, it's how we used to live. I mean, if you live in the rural areas, we did not have the convenience of just popping into the supermarket and getting veggies from the store. Mm. So now it's, we can't say unfortunate, but it's that the production of having food move from someone's farm to your table, there's a lot of processes that go behind that. I mean, you mentioned the pesticide usage. Sometimes your apples come all the way from Cape Town to your table. And when you could just grow it in your backyard, you know? So it's not as easy. I mean, I don't have green fingers and, you know, I do have space here at home and I'm trying to also plant some things. So maybe take us from the beginning. What do you need to do first? Like getting the soil ready, you know, getting your seeds. How do you then start from the beginning?
The key thing, again, it starts down to how you prepare the soil. I used to, all the grass and everything, you know, in the leaves, we had a pile of compost.
Okay.
So I decided instead of going to buy compost from the shops or soil, let me create my own compost, because from the compost, that's where you get your good soil.
Yeah, your good nutrients.
So we had this big pile where me and wifey had an issue because she said it was smelling, it was becoming too much, it was not necessary aesthetics for the house, you know?
Of course.
So it was in the right, you know, the right look for people to come and sit in the lawn. You know, they'd be looking at this pile of like rubbish. But that rubbish is the soil, you know, but you have to make sure that it works. Of course, other people may choose to go buy compost or topsoil. These days, all these people sell topsoil mixed with something. I don't know what they mix with it, but they tell you this is the soil. So, but if you have the luxury of making your own compost and also, then you can do that. But oftentimes we don't have that luxury, right?
Yeah.
So you can buy organic compost these days from some of these nurseries and some topsoil, and you mix that, you prepare it so that it's ready for your crops. Yeah. And of course, how you prepare it, you have to learn. And I think it's just because I know, you know, when it's ready, because that's how I grew up. So then we prepared the compost. When the compost was what I think was ready, may not necessarily be 100%, so I started laying it, you know, on the grass and just making sure that it's ready to plant things. So that's basically what I did. The reason I used my own compost was to make sure that my soil is organic.
It's pure, like 100%.
It's pure organic, because remember, when you eat something, let's say you eat a cabbage, that cabbage roots have to feed from something. So if you feed it a soil with pesticides, you're going to get a different cabbage. But if you feed it with good soil and good nutrients, you're going to get a good cabbage. So it's all in the taste, it's all in the nutrition that's in the crop. So I think that's, for me, the most important part. So it took a bit of time, maybe took 3 or 6 months to prepare that soil.
Every day
you can imagine, I'm being told, hey, that thing, it's not
really. Well, I don't really think it was 6 months. It was like 3 months, and then it was sort of ready.
Yeah, let's say we started it in February. Yeah. I started planting just after June, you know, July. But yeah, I guess in June I already planted outside the garden, but not in the greenhouse.
Not in the greenhouse, yeah.
But okay. It's all relative, depending how. I mean, these days the way there are things they sell, right? They call them compost activators.
Yeah.
And also, I had to try and find the organic compost activator, because some of the branches are hard to break down. So the activator is something that really chows the grass quickly, but you can try to get to as organic as possible. Even though it's organic, I don't trust. So once I put then I give it another 6 months so that I can feel that the soil is organic. In order to know that your soil is good, then you must have earthworms. So when you have earthworms, you know that as they eat the stuff, they poop the soil, right? The soil comes from the earthworms. You know, if you take an earthworm, tonight band who grew up in the rural areas, if you break it, you find soil inside the earthworm, right? And sometimes we used to eat these earthworms because they
just appear in the soil.
Appear. So they eat, this. When you have earthworms, a lot of it, then your soil is getting good.
Oh,
and then from then you start to have really, really good soil. So that's how you prepare.
You put in your compost. Like you always tell us, guys, don't throw away the peels of the potato peels and the apples and what.
Yeah, I think almost everything that is from vegetables.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's some vegetables that take longer. I mean, I wouldn't put mangoes. Some of the vegetables really can just be toxic, right, for the soil. But spinach, peels, beetroot stuff, you know, not all fruits, maybe apple stuff is very good.
Yeah.
So because, again, it's nutrients, right, for the soil. So I mix that till it gets rotten and then it becomes proper compost. And
dog poo?
Yeah, dog poo, it works as fertilizer.
Chicken really? Poo works as fertilizer. I didn't know that. Okay.
So
that shocked me.
Or any shit, because you put it there, it helps to fast track the radical. Because remember, dog poo is toxic. It's got a bit of ammonia. So it gets in there. So it helps the soil to break down quickly. So that the compost to break down quickly to turn into proper soil or into proper fertilizer. It keeps it fertilized. I mean, you can't put dog poo on the soil just as it is. You know, you have to make sure that it's broken down into soil.
Okay, so now when we get to the planting now, your soil is ready. And do I just get the seeds and just plant them next to each other, or there's a science behind it? Because recently I took my papaya seeds and I just threw them in the garden. And now I'm seeing there's leaves growing out, you know? So, I mean, maybe I'm lucky. I don't know what's growing out. Maybe it's weeds. Maybe it's the papaya. I'm not sure. So what is the science behind the seeds you plant? Do you have to plant them next to the same type of food, or how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, if you throw any seed on the soil, it's bound to grow, right? But what normally is, because if the seed gets water and grows, but you have to understand the whatever the fruit or the veggie you put in, right? What it is and how long does it take to grow? You know, how big does it get?
Yeah.
Right? So if you put, you must know a papaya, it's a massive tree, right? And how tall, I mean, if you put them next to each other, the trees are gonna collide, then it's gonna be a problem. So you have to know how big does the fruit get, how big does the vegetable get, and then you space it nicely, right? When it's a seed, it may not seem like it's going to get that big.
Yes.
But as it grows, you know, I think we planted Cape spinach, right? Because we started growing when we were in Pretoria during lockdown, right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't do it now. We started because during lockdown, there was nothing, you know, the shops were closed. I just said, why don't we grow our own vegetables? You know, and that's when we started growing. So we planted Cape spinach because, you know, kale is very good for you. But we put, and what call this, and carrot, but we put the seeds too close to each other, right? And that the carrot started overlapping, you know, and it became this mishmash of carrot, four carrots in one, or this massive tree of kale spinach on top of normal cherry spinach. So we realized that the spacing was too close.
Yeah.
You never know, right? Like, because I hadn't really grown kale or spinach in a long time. So the spacing was very too close. So then I realized, okay, when we do it, I need to space it maybe 10 centimeters away from each other. I have to think, how big does it get? Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. So you must know the thing you're planting, how big does it get? And then the spacing has to be specific. And these days, when you go buy seedlings, maybe from a nursery, or you buy extra seeds, they do give you instructions.
Okay.
And they'll tell you space it. The same thing is like tomatoes, right? When people grow tomatoes, it's the worst thing you can ever grow if you don't really look at, because tomatoes can just go anywhere you want. So every now and then you have to try and cut it, because tomatoes, you have to keep them in a straight line, hold them maybe next to a rod. And the best, you know, fruit from the tomatoes is the ones that grow in a straight line. But there's branches that can go anywhere that could really kill your whole garden. So you must know, I'm growing tomatoes now. Every now and then I must go prune, so that it grows nicely. So that's what it is in the spacing. You must understand, because you don't throw everything there and expect it to grow. So you, what if it's got roots that goes under your house and it breaks down your house and all the foundation?
Sounds so complicated, but yeah.
No, it's not. It's not. It's like, it's just, you must understand what you grow.
Yes. Oh, okay. So yeah, so I've been to your house and I've seen your garden. It was quite impressive. So maybe let's take the listeners through what you have at the back of your garden. So let's do a stock take, because I know you have a herb garden, you have fruits, and you have vegetables. So, Mawande, I know since you're the harvester.
The harvester can tell you exactly. I was the harvester can tell you.
Okay, so, yeah. So Lerato, you're right. So we've got the herb garden, and then we've got
Name the herbs.
Okay, so we've got rosemary, yeah. And we've got parsley, we've got mint, we've got oregano, we've got basil, and what else?
Sage.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got sage. Okay. Yes, we've got sage. So we boil. I suppose then we'll talk about what we do with what we harvest, right? But yeah. I mean, you know, sage is good for the chest, and as we know, you can use it as like you can dry it and then use it as to drive out bad energy. Yeah. So I think those are the herbs that we have for now. But then I realized that some of the herbs that we have, we don't really use. So I said to myself, maybe we should just plant what we use almost like on a daily, because you find that some, like with the mint,
yes,
there's so much mint you can use. And now we ended up having a lot of mint, and it grows like really, really, really fast. So I said to him, so we need to check what really works for us.
Okay.
So that's the herb garden. And then at the greenhouse, we have tomatoes, we've got spinach, kale, celery, we've got hemp, we have cucumbers, we've got green peppers, robot peppers, green, yellow, red, we've got chilies, and outside we have
put in garlic, ginger,
turmeric. Oh yes, and then we've got garlic, ginger, turmeric.
Wow.
And then then outside we have beetroot, carrots, we have butternut, we have pumpkins, and we've got the fruit trees,
onions
and onions, of course, and onions and chives, of course. And then what else?
We've got the corn.
Yeah, the corn.
And corn as well.
Oh, we've got corn, well, both sweet corn and the traditional corn. And it's growing so beautifully. What else? Yeah, I think that's about it. And then we've got the fruit trees.
Yes.
So we've got grapes, we've got granadilla, we have apple, pear, guava, we have fig, we've got lemon, we've got apples, and peaches and apricots. But what was so, and prunes. So what was so weird, what I found fascinating was that some of the trees, they started bearing fruit so early on. So we need not have waited till the tree was like huge.
Like,
so you find that some of the trees, like the figs, the apricots, and peaches, they started growing, and oranges, yeah. They started growing like instantly. They started bearing fruit like instantly. Then I realized that actually it's the soil in which the tree is planted.
Okay, and then so, with the fruit trees, did you also start from seedling, or did you have to buy like the little trees from the local shops? Or
we bought little trees.
We
bought little trees.
My philosophy is, you know, I'm not big on trees. You know, Joburg is full of terrible trees, imported trees, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is. And some of these imported trees chow a lot of water.
True.
And they're not very good for the environment. There's too many birds, you know, they eat all this terrible fruit. So it was war, of course, again, because I was just chopping the trees, everything down. And she wanted her trees because she wanted shade.
Yeah.
So my philosophy was like, take down a useless tree and put something else on top of it. So that's what it is. If you remove a tree, you must plant something, right?
Yeah.
So what we did is that we replaced all the terrible trees with the fruit trees. So I couldn't really start planting seeds. So I would go to the nursery and buy maybe half a tree or something that's already grown. Maybe that's almost maybe 6 or 7 months and plant it. So that's what we did with lemons. But also I had to make sure the outside, remember, so that we got a greenhouse soil that we prepared with the compost, but the outside soil, I didn't have a choice. I had to buy organic compost from, you know, from the shops. And then that's what, you know, we spend a bit of time just throwing organic compost either on the grass or on the outside just to feed almost every tree. Even when you plant a fruit tree, you must prepare the soil where the roots are going to go. So I put like good compost, make sure that the stuff that's in this nutrients, maybe I'll put some organic salt as well, because remember they need the nutrients because the sun does not, and the rain is not as good as it used to be. So then I put some really good salt. So that's basically how we prepared the, what you call this thing, the soil where we plant the fruit trees.
All right, cool. And then you now mentioned that you also have a greenhouse. So now what's the difference between what grows in the greenhouse versus what you have outside? I mean, you could have just planted everything outside. What's the benefit of having a greenhouse?
Yeah. So, I mean, these days we know because of global warming, right, that the harshness of the sun and the weather conditions aren't the same anymore.
Yeah.
So the greenhouse, at least you can control the amount of sun that comes inside as well as the amount of water, right? And it protects you against harsh winter conditions. Right. So initially it was to help people to grow food across the year, right? Mm-hmm. Throughout the year. So greenhouse is got a control. So in winter it's warmer. So some of the plants don't really take well with winter.
Yes.
You know, so there's winter, we've got four seasons.
Yes.
So in each and every season, there is fruit and veggies or plants for each season.
For each season, yeah.
And now we don't necessarily get the same season like we used to before. And also, we consume a lot these days. We have no patience to wait, you know, for the green peppers in summer. We want to eat them now. Because that's what all the shops do, you know, wherever you go, I mean, you find that the mangoes are there throughout the year, which is not necessarily a good deal.
Yes.
Good thing, right?
It's not a good thing.
So because they grow them under controlled environment. Now, the issue with that controlled environment is that they might be putting the wrong stuff, pesticides.
That's true.
Some other things that not necessarily work for us. So I'd rather have my greenhouse and control the stuff that I use, but also still be able to feed, you know, our family throughout the year. So that's what it is. It's just because outside, I tell you, now we're supposed to be in summer, but it could be autumn and it could be winter tomorrow, which means it's really bad for the, you know, for the veggies or the fruit trees. So that's what the greenhouse is purely just to control the weather, control the sun, just to be able to grow veggies throughout the year.
Yeah, and what I like about your greenhouse is that it's not too big. I mean, even when I have a small garden, I could have that type of setup in my small garden, so it doesn't need like a whole lot of space. So now setting that up, so if I want to set up a greenhouse in my backyard, how do I go about that? Can I buy it? Do I have to call someone to have it made? You know, what goes into setting that up?
Yeah, there are people who build greenhouses, right? Because also you have to know the type of sheet you're going to use, you know, because not every plastic sheet is the same. You know, some of the plastic sheet could be really harsh, doesn't control the heat. So there are people who do greenhouses, but also you can go to all these nurseries. Like any nursery will tell you, this is what you do. And of course, Dr. Google might be able to also give you some instructions in terms of how to set up a greenhouse. But
you set up your own greenhouse.
We did, you know, we had someone
who
built greenhouses, but I had to tell him that it must be this size, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what we need. So he came and then built the steel, because we just had to have steel rolled around and then put the greenhouse sheet around. I mean, there are sort of advanced greenhouses, there's different type of greenhouses you can do. But for someone like you, I would say just set up something small, depending on the size that you have in your house. You could do a 1 meter by 1 meter. You know, you could do a 2 meter by, like a 2 square meter greenhouse. And that's what it is. I mean, what's important is the height, right? Because you can do pockets and pockets and layers of things to do. You could do maybe on top spinach, you can do at the bottom. So that's you can use the space efficiently. So you don't need to have a massive space, especially just to sustain you and your family. You can do small things, which is really important.
Okay, great. And then when it comes to the watering then of both inside the greenhouse and outside, how do you guys water your garden? Do you have like a harvesting tank, or how do you do the watering?
Mm. So, you know, we initially,
yeah,
I wanted to harvest water, which means I must put all the water tanks around the house. Now that became a problem, right? Because aesthetically, it doesn't really look great, you know, because the harvester was like, as much as we were harvesting water, I was like, no, if I'm going to come to my house and see all these tanks around as if it says Lali, this is not the right idea. So we had to sort of think, but also because municipal water is expensive, you know, yeah. I wouldn't advise people just to sustain any watering of vegetables from municipal water.
Mm.
So then we ended up drilling a borehole.
Okay.
So for us, it was important to, you know, to go down, drill a borehole. And luckily where we are, there's enough water underground.
Yeah.
So that really helped. So we drill a borehole, which is not cheap, but the same borehole water, we decided that we're going to use it throughout the house. So basically we no longer use municipal water, but we'll use it as emergency. Let's say if the pump of the borehole goes, then we switch to municipal water. But we off the grid. We use borehole water, we filter it, tested the water, filter it, put the right filters so we can drink the water. So it's really good. And we've been drinking it for almost over a year now, and we have no issues. Actually been great. When there's water shortages here, we don't understand. You know? We probably will sell it to people. If people want water, they can come to us, we'll give them nice filtered water. So that's basically what sustains us, because just watering the lawn and the flowers, it costs money. Imagine now where you have to water the veggies, because at least you must do twice a day, early and evening, or depending which season you're in, you know, yeah. There's dry season, you have to water maybe 3 times a day.
Wow.
So the borehole for us has been like a pleasure. We don't feel the need. We just pay the electricity for the pump, but
yeah.
We have no issues for when it comes. And then we change the filters every 4 months, and we pay maybe $300, you know, per filter, is about 3 filters.
Yeah.
So, and that's what we, every 4 months. And sometimes, because our water is clean, so we could go to 6 months without changing the filter. And it's easy, it's not a complicated system. So that's how definitely we use the water. I am, of course, a big fan of harvesting rainwater. Like I said, these days, water is very harsh, as well as the sun. So yes, you can harvest rainwater. I'm not sure some of it how good it is, but it's probably the great thing to do. What I like about borehole is because it's still rainwater, right? Because it comes from the top. It gets filtered through the ground, through the soil, till it gets to the water table. So by that time, it's filtered many times. Then we pump it up back to our tanks and they filter it again. So it's really...
It's very
clean water. And of course, without losing all the nutrients that's supposed to come with water.
But, yeah, because that's one of my issues. I mean, I have a small garden, but I hate watering the garden because I'm always thinking, one, I'm wasting water that, you know, I should be using for something else. And that's why I'm loving this rain season, because then I don't have to worry about watering my garden as much, you know, and the grasses are green. So I guess us having the rain has been beneficial. But do you ever think that there is something as too much rain? Because we've had lots of rains in the past few months. Is it a plus for you, or is there something that's called too much rain?
You should harvest your water, actually. You know, I think everyone should have a tank.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the global warming is becoming a problem.
It is.
Right? Everyone, I'm an advocate for harvesting water. If we could harvest water, you know, if I was government, I'd give people, every person, water tank. Yeah. There's a water tank and a pump. Service yourself. But so I think you should harvest water. But in terms of whether it's too much rain or not, it all depends. You know, the problem is that it's where the water goes. If the water is channeled towards the reservoirs to be able to fill up and store it. So if it's too much water, then we just build more reservoirs. There's enough space to build more reservoirs to store water so that we can pump it back. it can be maybe a bit too much for the plants that we're growing at the time, right? So if you have potatoes, you know, too much rain is bad for potatoes, right? There's many plants where the rain can be too much. Unfortunately, something you can't do.
Can't control.
But it doesn't rain throughout the year. There are floods, times, it's just about we have to learn to store. And also you have to control your garden that not a lot of water sits. You know, if you know you go to a garden that is flooded, which means you must create a channel for the water to go through to the drainage system. So that's what, for me, I think we should do. The greenhouse for us doesn't really get affected because water doesn't come in. So that's why the greenhouse is always going to be optimal because there isn't any water coming inside the greenhouse. So it's good. But outside the garden, there's things that we grow inside the garden, outside the garden, but there's things that grow inside the greenhouse.
Yeah.
And so the ones inside the greenhouse is the leaves, right? That sprouts on top. Things outside is the underground. It's like the, as Maande said, is the beetroot, is the onion, is
the carrots.
It's the carrots and stuff and potatoes. And then, of course, we've got the pumpkin that's like growing like mad. It just goes everywhere, even in the lawn for the kids. They can never be too much rain, to be honest.
So Maande once mentioned that you are trying to start this whole aquaponics system. So I was like, what is that? What is aquaponics? Because I know you have a chicken coop as well. So please explain what aquaponics is and how that works.
Yeah, I think it's aquaponics was designed for people with less space.
Okay.
Right? If you don't really have space, and you know, in places like Europe, I was explaining to my when I lived in London, you know, it's like all by apartments, which are then someone will have like at a certain floor, there'll be things growing because they grow. So they figure out that not all plants need the soil to eat,
okay.
Right? The plants need nutrients, but they use the soil to extract nutrients. They don't necessarily need the soil to survive. So that's the whole aquaponic system. They create a structure to hold the plant itself, but then all the roots are in the water to be able to suck as much nutrients as possible. So they had a system, a hydroponic system, where basically it's just all plants with no soil and then feeding with really good water with nutrients. Because these days you can make up nutrients in the lab and just inject it in the plants. That's what people do anyway. That's why we've got chickens as big as our heads, you know, because that's basically... people just inject stuff, right? So that's a hydroponic system, but they realize that, you know, you have the aqua animals which live underwater. So in the water, there's an ecosystem. You have the plants that are on top of the water, at the bottom you have the animals. So it's like a cycle. And you find out the plants in the water, they grow nicely, they don't need the soil. And then basically, but they get fed from the there's something that happens with the aqua animals, you know, with your fishes or whatever that lives underwater. So they figured out actually, this is actually, you can even get more nutrients because you could be feeding the fish with something, with raw food, but then they take that food inside as they poo-poo it.
Yeah.
That becomes much more fertile and it's actually good for the soil. It even makes the plants even much more better. So that's, they kind of figured that out, that whole system. And they tested, that was really amazing. So I saw this system, I thought this is really great. And then they had an aquaponics with chickens, right? Where basically not all fishes can take chicken droplets. So you have to find the right fish that can take the chicken, because you know, when the chicken eats, doesn't really digest all the food. If you've seen like a chicken poop, sometimes you find out there's still like pieces of corn or whatever you feed it, or that's still in there. Now that gets fed to the fishes. The fishes will eat and they do another process. And that process will come out into the water that goes to the plants. So it was a trial and error for us.
Yeah.
So let's try this. So it's an efficient system. It allows, because you get to places where people don't have any soil. Let's say you live in an apartment, you don't have soil. And soil makes things messy and dirty, but water, you could keep it clean and contained. Same thing as fishes. All you have to do, you just feed your fishes their food that you buy, the whole ecosystem. You don't have to buy soil for the plants or compost. because the fertilizer and everything in the system works. So that's like a whole complete aqua system, which is just to be as efficient. And that also is not seasonal. That doesn't get affected by winter, summer, everything. So it just, throughout the year, you could grow in your nice potatoes, your nice spinach, and all your herbs. You know, most of the herbs don't really need soil. You know that, right? None of the herbs need to grow from soil. Yeah. And some of these vegetables don't really need soil. There's few that need soil, maybe like potatoes. Those who grow as roots underground, they need the soil, right? Yeah. Because they have to hold them together. But those who grow on top, they don't necessarily need the soil. They just need the nutrients. So you have to figure out which plants don't need soil, which plant needs soil. That's the soil aqua. But you know, the other thing is aquaponics can be expensive because you have to buy the necessary machines and control it. So we did like a manual one here, a manual process, which means every day we have to go to the garden and fix and feed and pump out, which you know who goes to the garden, right?
Not the harvester.
If they're not the harvester, because you know, with the cleaning and the, because that's why this filter, you know, you have to make sure that the filter is clean. So there's a whole of things that you have to make sure that it's optimal. Because if the filter is not clean, the fishes are gonna start dying.
Yeah.
Because they think it's clogged. So it was a process. I think we converted, you know, that compost thing I was telling you about, clean it up, because then the harvester was very happy. Clean it up, fill it with water, put tilapia fish. And then on top of tilapia fish, we put in chicken, you know, chicken, the egg layers.
Do you have the fish already?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We do have. And maybe 150 fishes of tilapia fish. Yeah. It's a beautiful fish. You should check it out. Tilapia is very tasty. Very good. Also, it adapts very well. I can't put trout under chicken, what do you call it? Because trout is like, it's very sensitive fish. Yeah. But there's a specific fish that works for the aquaponic system. So that's what we have. So we put the chickens on top, but then we realize because our system is manual, so it gets clogged, you know, the pump gets clogged and it became too heavy for me. So we're like, okay, let's take out the chickens, let them roam normally. Let's just keep the aquaponics, you know, like just the fish and the veggies. Yeah. But also our system is not automatic. The nice thing about the aquaponics system is that I think they use what's called drop feed, which means it goes from your plants to the fish as a rotation. But for us, because most of our plants still feed from the soil, right?
Yeah.
So we created from the fish, we create a reservoir that pumps the water to the, you know, to the garden. All our fish garden and the greenhouse gets fed from the water that comes from the aquaponics, from the fishes. Yeah. So that's called our manual aquaponics. But normally an expensive one, it does it itself. Yeah. Goes from the fish to the plants because there's no soil, right? So you can do that. But now because it's soil, imagine bringing the soil back to the fishes, it will clog everything.
Goodness, yeah.
So now what we probably looking at is to take out the soil and actually do a full aquaponic system that we can run. But it's a bit expensive, so we're not sure whether the way we're doing things, it seems to be working and we're getting the right veggies. If we were now with our greenhouse in the garden, we can supply maybe 10 to 20 families.
Yeah.
And we're just like a family of one. So we've got too much. We've got too much herbs, we've got too much vegetables, we've got too much of everything.
Yeah, and but some I told Mawande that you guys should start a little supermarket and call it the bazaar, you know, because the name is Bazaar. So, you know, you can call it the veggie bazaar or whatever. And look, I'm even willing to come through and pay because I know that how you grow your vegetables and the process that you've now explained that, you know, that's literally 100% organic. I mean, I don't mind driving all the way to the east, you know, to come get, you know, fruits, veggies, and eggs, because now
you... And eggs, I mean, eggs for us, is it was a big thing because, I growing up in the rural areas, I'd rather have my own eggs.
And eggs are quite...
And also, when the chicken stops laying, we eat it. You know, we ate probably, we slaughtered 10 chickens here because we realized later on that these things were roosters. They were not necessarily egg layers, and we fed them.
Yeah.
So I slaughtered all of them. There was blood all over the garden, and you know the kids were complaining. I was like, "We're gonna eat it, you know, get this thing." But they eat the meat, even though they were complaining. But you know, you're right. I mean, we almost maybe thought we could sell it to a close knit of friends,
yeah,
and we could almost make it like you get a chicken, you get an egg, you get green vegetables, you get whatever you want. You know, that's. But the problem with the harvester, we tried some business before. We know when we're selling things, but the harvester was giving to people for free. I've never seen that man. So now I'm worried. I'm like, it looks like I'd be like.
No, can I just interject? Yeah. Can I just interject? I think because, you know, Lerato, we this was trial and error. So we didn't know what was going to come out, right? So the plan was not to go into business. The plan was to see what are we able to grow.
Yeah.
And now that we can actually see, hey, this thing works. Mm. Now I said to Maenza again, perhaps let's just start selling these things that we're planting. I mean, now we've literally... We're starting from scratch with the greenhouse, right?
Yeah. We're going to take out everything. We still got stuff there. You know, yeah, we still got a lot of stuff. We got chilies. We got...
The peppers.
We've got... I mean, the cucumbers growing again massively.
I've seen your cucumbers. Wow.
They're humongous.
Yeah, we took them out. The tomatoes, again, they're growing again because the greenhouse soil is nice. So now... But the whole idea is because, as Amanda said, it was a trial and error.
Yeah.
So we're going to redo so that it's optimal, right? We know, okay... We're going to do a grocery list. You know what's called a grocery list? We look at the veggies that we eat.
Yes.
And then we say which one can grow inside, which one can grow outside. And then we prepare the soil from scratch again and make sure that we know we're getting 100 cucumbers, we're getting this much, you know, and that's basically what we're going to do. Maybe we're going to do in a month because we're waiting for the corn. We've got lots of corn that we're probably going to harvest in by end of March, beginning of April. Once the corn season is out, then we build the veggies and stuff from scratch. The fishes are there, they're great. Also, we're probably going to eat them at some point.
And I mean, we could also sell the tilapia for those, because I mean, it's one of those delicacies, like from Nigeria. They really like it there.
Most East Africa, I mean, the guys, even here, there's, you know, Woolies sells tilapia fish. I was shocked to go there, it's so expensive.
Yeah.
Like, huh? I've got 150 of them there, and they're going to give birth soon. So we're going to have like babies and babies for days. And then we could supply Woolies. Woolies come, we've got thousands of tilapia fish there.
You know, organic, 100%. So so clearly you guys have gone through a lot of investing into this, you know, money, time, and everything. So are you seeing the return on investment on, you know, you are clearly spending less on food, but are you seeing the return on investment?
You know, I think when we started it, right, like I said, it was a test. Yeah. Maybe we haven't really seen the returns yet, because what we built versus what we got out, because we went, like I said, we went overboard. You know, and my wife says, I've got chickens, I've got fishes, we've got all these palms.
We've got bees as well, remember?
We've got bees. We've got honey.
Two hives there that produce honey. For us, it was to create an ecosystem where it's organic, where we can eat most of our stuff from the garden. I think now, as we convert from what we have to the next thing of now, we do a grocery list, because what we planted was not necessarily like, let's say we don't have baby marrows, and baby marrows, we consume them a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we got eggs, which we, of course we can do, because maybe some chicken, but we can't do a lot, because also where we are, you know, it's in the city. It's like, it's in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. You know, and luckily all our neighbors have got also big pieces of land. No one bothers the other. And they're probably scared of us anyway. we have, to be honest, I think most of the stuff that can be eaten, it sort of reduced. Like now we just juiced our beetroot. So we took that beetroot, we juiced, we drank beetroot. So it's really good, which is really amazing. And we've got ginger there, and we put out some turmeric. These are very expensive, but we bought these plants. Now we make there's something we make, which is like what calls for zonge. It's like ginger, garlic, chili, turmeric, kills all the diseases, which is our specialty.
Yes.
And we juice it. So now for the first time, everything came from our garden. So we had our chili from the garden, we had our ginger, we had our turmeric, we had our garlic. So now we're starting to see the fruits. We haven't really quantified it in terms of how much, but I do think we almost broke even in terms of what invested.
Okay.
But now going to the next phase, it's given us experience, but also, it's probably now we're going to start doing less, you know, in terms of what we buy from the shops. Because every now and then, you know, we go fully vegan. You know, we have days where we go fully vegan. Then when it's fully vegan, we know it's only from the garden. Yeah. We don't have to buy anything. But when it's not fully vegan, I was saying maybe we could buy one lamb, one pig, and keep it at the backyard there, so that now all the meat is also in the same. But I don't think I'm going to win that. I wanted to buy 30 goats and keep them in the backyard. Yes, wow. My wife had the feet was like, and it was only to keep them for a weekend. She was like, no. I'm like, come on, it's just.
Oh my gosh. And I mean, I'm just imagining having a pig and a goat and everything. Do you have the?
No, that's a lot.
Yeah,
the neighbors will complain.
No, that's a lot.
I mean, we live next to a private school. There's lots of other people to be. It'll be a mess. SPCA will be in our garden, in our gate, sorry.
Exactly. So. But what has growing your own food and just starting this whole journey, what has that taught you about yourselves, you know? I mean, a lot of patience. I mean, I know I'm not patient, but I could try and learn. So what has that taught you?
Sure. I think for me, because I always take an in-depth look at things, you know?
Yeah.
I started immersing myself into the whole process of plants growing from seedlings to like a fully fledged fruit.
Mm.
And you know, I just said to myself the other day, you know, there's a lot we could learn from plants and how we do things just as human beings from a spiritual level. Like one thing that I learned from a personal spiritual level is that it's important where you grow things, even as human beings, where you plant yourself as a person. If you plant yourself in bad soil, you'll only grow bad fruit, you know? That's the first big lesson for me. And secondly, patience. You know, you don't plant something and then you think that, oh wow, the next day we're gonna get the tomatoes that you planted yesterday. So when we started with the whole process, I used to go out and ask, how is this thing working? When are we getting something?
Yeah.
Then we started seeing with the fruit trees, like the flowers started budding. And then I looked at the whole process of a flower transforming from that to a fruit flower, transforming from a flower to a fruit, to something that we're able to eat. And it's just so amazing, you know? And most importantly for my kids, they got a free biology or natural science lessons.
Yeah.
So now they actually understand what it means to plant a seed, and then it turns into something tangible that they get to eat. And because our children are born in the city, this has also created an opportunity for them to be one with nature, to be one with even the food that they eat, you know? So my Isaac has always said, guys, don't put in, like on your skin, for example, always says, but why do you want to put on something on your skin that you can't eat? It doesn't work like that. Everything has to be like organic. So we're still trying to get there, you know, but those are the lessons. But most importantly, you know, as colloquial as it can sound, like, you know, what you put in is what you really get out.
Yeah.
You have to put in the time and the effort and the discipline, and you must have the love for it. Just to share a little joke, what happened when we started this whole process.
The
lemonade. That was funny. So we then moved it into our home, right?
Yeah.
And then there was this lemon tree. We got here, there was this lemon tree, but it wasn't bearing any fruit. Like, it was just sitting there. My husband, like, started cussing at the tree. And then the next thing, he comes into the house. Hey, you won't believe what this bloody tree did. Nadine. And it actually cut me, like literally, I don't know what he was doing.
It fought back.
The tree literally fought back. And then I said to him, but you should have gone and read your Bible. Remember that Bible story where this guy cursed the, I don't know if it was the fig tree or what. And then, I don't know, the person got hurt. So he literally got hurt. And then I realized that, you know, okay, as funny as it was, I said to myself, okay, plants have life. They react, they see, they feel. Well, Lerato, you know, you would know that, you know? So it was so funny, but after he cursed the tree and the tree fought back, the tree started, like, you know, we pruned it, yes. We pruned it, and then lemons grew like crazy after that.
Wow.
So, that was really funny. That was funny.
I mean, the thing, I was under the tree as I got up, then one of the thorn got like, stuck in there, cut me here.
It really cut bad. Yeah.
But I think, I mean, the lesson is, of course, the issue of pruning, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, that nature talks to us. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes the things that comes out, if you don't have a relationship with the land, mm-hmm. and you don't have a relationship with nature, you're not going to bear the fruit. So you exchange energy. So mm-hmm. it's the same energy that they feed off you, same energy that you feed to them. At the same time is, you know, you talk to them, you know, you have to talk to nature, right? Mm. And be able to tell them, I want this, okay, I want to get this. But also you have to dig your hands in, you know, normally we have a guy who's a gardener, right? Who doesn't come, but most of my time, I spend time showing him. Then I'll dig my hands deep into the soil so that he understands the value of the soil. Mm. So he's sort of embedded into the soil. So it's like I'm introducing him to our land and say, this is so and so, this is what I do. Then, and some time I'll take my spade, get in there, cut the stuff, remove, prune, make sure, you know, go talk, touch, feel the plants. We've got like a massive, what's this tree that's growing? Like a massive, it's going mad now. It's the granadilla tree.
Mm. Like, and we even have eucalyptus.
So we have like 20 now. In the state it was one, we had to prune, but now it's expanding. Even the lemons are massive, there's lots. There's like all this fruit that, because we have to keep feeding it, making sure, telling it that you are safe here, you know, we'll take care of, you know, we got birds all over there.
Yeah.
The house, you know, when we cut the trees down, we made sure that the ones where the birds nest, we don't cut them.
Yeah.
Because that tells you that those ones are alive, they're home. But the ones where there's no birds nest, we cut them down. All of them, replace them with fruit trees. Yeah. But then, one thing you must understand about being organic and being the soil, you also feed nature that comes off it. So I can't be killing the snails, you know, with this pesticide. I can't be killing the worms. So the chickens will eat the worms, which is the circle of life. Yeah. But I can't take poison and throw, you know, when we had issues with the snails, so we had to try to figure out what is the organic pesticide, something that's like canola, oil. So those ones don't kill it, but they remove it from the plants. Because oftentimes we throw all these terrible organic stuff. I mean, there's, like I tell you, our mint was full of hojos, you know, everything. So it's part of nature.
It's nature.
I mean, the bees that we have at the back, they come into the house and they bite the kids. They bite everyone.
They stung.
Yeah, it's stung Lungu and Naledi. And I was told, take these bees away. I'm like, no, you can't. But it's nature. They must taste the blood.
It's the whole ecosystem.
Exactly, the whole ecosystem. So... But that's, I think you learn so much. For me, I think personally, it allowed me to be, I like what I'm doing now, right? I could be out there making lots of money, just not spending time at home with my kids, but it forces me to be home, right?
Yeah.
But also appreciate those things around you, nature, the people. So, and it allows us, you know, that time just to be home.
I think also a lesson that we on a, well, you know, I'm big on spirituality. Well, when I read in Mindseeker, you know this. Like the pruning, right? Mm-hmm. Like we had a big conversation, myself and Mindseeker, the other day. I said, isn't it amazing how we literally have to prune trees that are not bearing fruit?
Mm-hmm.
And yet as human beings, we complain when God prunes us.
Yeah.
Because the pruning process is painful. It's painful to cut something. I'm sure for the trees it is as well. So, you know, I took such a big lesson from that to say, actually, when we go through our own things, you know, trials and tribulations as human beings, we could take a great lesson from the trees and the plants to say, if you get pruned, you are supposed to bear fruit. God is not a narcissistic God who is just going to inflict pain on you, you know.
Or so
there's pain beyond, there's purpose beyond pain type of a thing. Mm. So it's one of the things that I took, you know, from this whole process. And I'm still learning every day. I still get my aha moments.
Yes. I love that so much.
No, I remember, you know, when we put those fishes there, I was told, this thing stinks, man. This thing, we don't want this thing here. Why you wanna put fishes here? But now, but when the thing about sometimes you don't know, when you plant something, not everyone can understand what's gonna come out.
Yeah.
Right? So what comes out could be beautiful or could be terrible, depending on the care of ice planted. I think sometimes that's been a surprise for all of us.
Mm.
I mean, I was surprised by the cucumbers. I was shocked. They were this massive. I was like, whoa. I mean, we harvested some pumpkin. We have massive pumpkin. We had one of these things that we eat, butternut.
Yeah.
Like this morning, you know, we had this, we drank the beetroot. So, but I thought the beetroot wasn't growing because there was something wrong with the soil. Mm. So what the beetroot has done, because the soil was hard going down, so the bottom part grew half, and then on top of it, it decided to do another beetroot. So all the beetroots are like twins. Our beetroots with like two beetroots.
Mm-hmm.
So which they became this massive now. So we juice them up. They're so sweet. The soil is amazing. They're great. You can test. There isn't no pesticide. There is nothing. It's just as in the fiber that comes out of the beetroot is really great. I mean, we've got that jam squash coming out of our nose. I'm not sure what.
Oh yeah, we've got jam squash.
And chilies. We've got red chilies. And you know, coming down to the herbs, you know, a lot of the people don't understand the herbs, you know, that it's some of the most important things, right? Whether they give flavor to the food you eat, but also they give flavor to the body and healing. And these eggs are going, you know, like we have cannabis, you know, we boil cannabis and sage and put the honey and lemon and drink that. So that's our tea. Instead of me going buy some bloody tea bagger that has been tried for many years. But with here in Uganda, we had thyme as well, you know.
Yeah.
Thyme couldn't really grow properly, but thyme is good. If you put thyme, sage, you know, honey and lemon, you drink that as tea, oh man, it changes your life. And then throw in a bit of cannabis. Don't smoke the cannabis, I don't know, but you can drink it as tea, for sure.
yeah, thank you so much, guys. Like I think the lesson, from your lesson, I'm going to use that as a lesson for this journey that I'm starting, you know, like this is me planting a seed, and I'm very hopeful about, you know, the trees or the fruits or the veggies that it will bear. I'm very excited, but also taking the lesson that, you know, you have to give it time, consistency, you have to be patient. So I'll also take those lessons, and yeah, I'm very grateful for you guys for sharing this journey with me, and also just, yeah, I've learned a lot. I'll try and grow a few fruits, veggies at my garden. I've planted a blueberry tree. So it's starting to die off a bit, and I'm like, but why are you dying? So now, yeah, I need to understand that I need to first learn about the plant and then maybe just take care of the soil as well. And looking
at, and maybe just it needs a certain type of water and care of it. Maybe it needs a proper special. I mean, like I said, Dr. Google is there. It will tell you, you know, like what, and berries are very finicky, right? It's like strawberries. All berries are very finicky. They need a controlled environment because they can't accept harsh sun or harsh water. So you, and also how, you know, what space. Also, I don't know if your soil is harder and the roots can't spread. So it might be better to put it in a pot plant till you feel like it's this size inside your kitchen where there's the sun can hit the window so that it grows to become something stronger. Then you can take it outside. So those are important lessons, I guess, when it comes to plants. You know, there was a saying, I think maybe about 10 years ago, they say healthy is the new living.
Yeah.
So the journey you're in is not necessary. It's actually, this is the right time to do it because this is the time where everyone wants to be healthy. Exactly. But you know what they do? They go to Woolies because Woolies ain't gonna make you healthy, right?
You will not be sued by Woolies.
Yeah, but no.
Yeah, let's not mention brands. Yeah, let's start again. You know, healthy. Don't go to the supermarket.
Okay. Don't talk about other people. No, healthy is the new living. I use retail as a thing that you can buy anything from any shop.
Yeah.
Right. But if you don't know what you're buying and how that works with your body, and how it got there, then this is an issue. And I take away the W that I mentioned, but it's an issue of, because not everything, of course, we can grow from our gardens. You know, some stuff we still buy, but we can't depend on the retail to tell us what it means to be healthy. You know, we can buy as long as we know what we buy and how best we use it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you for your time. I think in closing, is this something that you would suggest for someone, even if they don't have space, to start as, you know, a business idea, like grow your own food, sell it, And I'm saying it again to Mawande that I'm willing to come there and buy. So don't feel like you have too much. Please sell to us as well. This is something that who has limited space can just look into and start growing veggies and selling them. Because, I mean, the times are getting tough now. You know, food prices are going up and it's great that you can grow your own food, but also just making money from it. Yeah.
Yes, I think, you know, we've actually, you know, motivated some of our friends to start planting their own food, and they don't necessarily have big yards. Yeah. So with the space that you have, look at what can grow within that space. So what I've learned is that certain veggies or fruits, they grow, they need a certain space. So read up on the type of fruit or the food rather that you'd want to plant and see if it works for your space. For example, I know that tomatoes are one of those things that can grow anywhere and everywhere, you know, and you could actually sell tomatoes, and you use tomatoes for anything from cooking stews to salads, to a lot of things, you know? Yeah. So there is a demand for it. So I would really implore people to go and read up on what you want to plant, and obviously for your own consumption at the end of the day. Because you don't, the whole point of you planting things, yes, there's this business side of it, but also it should have an immediate benefit, financial benefit for you as a family. So so look at the things that people really, really like their basics. I don't know, when it comes to my kitchen, their basics like onions. An onion has to be part of my dish. Yeah. Peppers have to be part of my dish, you know? So you know that those are going to sell really, really, really fast. Yeah. So, and also it's an opportunity for people to start their own businesses. Also food security.
Food security.
It's a thing in South Africa. So you can participate in that. You don't need to have like hectares and hectares of land for you to start this thing, you know. Start small and then see. For example, you can decide, even with the herb garden, you can decide as an individual, well, I'm only going to plant rosemary, only rosemary in the small space that I have. And then you identify three shops or three restaurants that you can supply that rosemary with. So you don't have to do a lot of things. I'm a believer of being focused in one thing and then let that thing grow. So you become Miss Rosemary, you know? So there is an opportunity. And I think that especially when it comes to herbs, there is a demand for it. Like I've seen even with the restaurants that are close to our house, there is this lady, literally she's there delivering parsley every day to all of the restaurants down the road.
Wow.
And I said to my Zeke, but can you see, I think this lady actually is just planting parsley and that's what she does. And it works, you know, so that's a form of business that one can look into, but you don't need hectares of land. And I think, you know, one thing COVID has taught us is that you need to supplement your income.
That's true.
So by supplementing your income doesn't necessarily mean, I think it's an opportunity where you do something that you really love.
Yeah,
and you know, it doesn't feel like work. Lord knows we are working, we need to supplement, but yet do things that don't feel like work. You know, I think people shouldn't be scared and think that you only need to have green fingers. You know other people have green fingers. I don't know if I've got green fingers, but the herb garden, I tender it, so, and at least, you know, I can see that it's growing. And you mustn't be scared. What I do.
Okay guys, I think let's end it here for today. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And thank you for the lessons, and like I said, thank you for being my first guest. That's all. I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Please come get our juice.
We still make our juice.
You know, we sell our veggies, and no eggs now because the chickens are hatching.
Okay.
So, but the eggs, once we've got that, we can give you one chick. You can keep it there in your place. In my
place. Thank you so much. I'll definitely take you up on that. I'll come pick up. All right.
Thank you so much. All the best for for your baby. And I think, you know, the topic that you had today, it sort of links up, you know, to what you're starting.
Yes.
And may it grow from seedling phase to your, until it bears so much fruit for you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.